Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. Residents in Glenwood Springs have elected a new city council, and with the new majority, expect changes afoot, especially as the issues on both ends of the valley become more connected.
As we get closer to communities, the local issues are less partisan, so we can talk about even contentious issues with people from across the political spectrum.
And in Aspen, two newspaper columnists butt heads over the local affordable housing program.
As I read Roger's column, he said that not only is the housing system good, but so is the crime. The title of his column was "The Crime Wave That Makes Aspen Great."
Well, that threw me. Let me back you up. You basically said everybody in employee housing is a criminal.
I didn't.
You pretty much alleged that.
I did not.
You implied that it was widespread.
First, I'm joined via Skype with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent. Thanks for taking the time today, Randy.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you had a big election this week in Glenwood Springs.
Yeah, the marijuana tax votes weren't really close. I think that there's a realization in the community that an awfully lot of the marijuana purchases are from visitors, and local folks have been willing to tax our visitors. We did it with extending the local option sales tax that's used for mostly capital projects last year, and now this, and the tax is not uncommon among area communities. So there's one on the transfer of marijuana from grow operations to retail stores, and then there's a retail tax that the council actually got authorization to raise. It starts at 5%, but they can raise it up to 15% without voter approval.
Which is kind of interesting. Yeah, which is almost certain that they will. If they can, they will.
Right? If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right?
And exactly.
They'll need revenue, I suppose, at some point. So.
Right. Did that surprise you, just the margin?
No. Honestly, the council races were what surprised me. 2 years ago, there was concern about, you know, not enough people running. But with the bridge and the potential for developing the confluence of the Roaring Fork and the Colorado and transportation challenges on the south side of town, all of those issues created a lot of interest in the council race. And I think two themes came through. The candidates who won, Jonathan Godis and Shelley Kaup, who Shelley has been on the council before, and Jonathan will represent the south side of town, both talked about the need to pay some attention to the neighborhoods away from downtown, and kind of out of necessity because of the bridge, because of the Downtown Development Authority has done quite a bit of work in terms of streetscaping and sprucing up downtown. There's been an awful lot of attention on the core downtown area, and folks in the neighborhoods have started to feel a little bit like, hey, look, we live here all year. Our streets are in bad shape. Midland Avenue is in terrible shape. And it's really time for the city to look at our needs and spend some money. So I think that the election results reflected that. And then Charlie Willman, who's a local attorney, he's the coach for the Glenwood Springs High School mock trial team, which is wildly successful. He's been on the Downtown Development Authority. Really a great guy who has accomplished an awful lot. And Amber Wissing, who ran against Godis on the south side, they were sort of the establishment slate. The committee that backed the local option sales tax extension last year was backing them. They raised the most money. Well, Shelley Kaup raised quite a bit of money, but in their respective races, Wellman and Wissing raised the most money, and they lost. And I think that the movement toward neighborhoods and perhaps a little bit of a backlash against the establishment candidates explains the results. And then we did have one unopposed candidate, Rick Voorhees, who will represent West Glenwood. So, right. You know, three of the council members were term limited, and we get three new ones, all of whom are good. And it'll be interesting to see what the dynamic on council will be. Although it was sort of the left wing of the council, which had shifted toward something of a minority that was term limited. So the direction of decisions may not change that much, but I think that as soon as the bridge is done, you'll really start to see a shift toward some needs, particularly on the south side of town. I mean, once again, the question of whether Glenwood Springs needs an airport or whether that land out there should be used for transportation, affordable housing, and some other development started to emerge. And I think that's probably a really interesting debate that the town's going to have within 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. So when do they take office? When are they sworn in?
April 20th.
Okay.
It's really quick.
Yeah, it is. So we should start to see some progression and moving forward with a new slate.
It's always interesting to get, you know, close to a majority of new council people. That's
yeah. It is. We will see what happens in Aspen's election, which is on May 2nd, and we've got two incumbents running. Aspen Times and the Aspen Daily News are holding the traditional squirm night Thursday, April 13th. I'm going to be moderating it.
Last week we did the first of what I plan to be quarterly forums in the community that I'm calling Common Ground. The thinking behind that is that as we get closer to communities, that local issues are less partisan, so we can talk about even contentious issues with people from across the political spectrum. There was some talk about up valley, down valley relations.
Yep.
A little bit of a, certainly a perceived, if not a real, failure from folks at your end of the valley to really appreciate the issues here and the fact that your workforce passes through here. So in so many ways, our issues are your issues. But I think it could be really interesting to have a conversation about how Pitkin County, Garfield County, Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and, you know, Rifle and points in between can collaborate, put heads together and figure out, I mean, we have these transportation challenges, we have housing challenges. There's talk of a housing authority, now regional housing authority, sort of like the transportation authority. Sure, absolutely, we need affordable housing in Glenwood Springs, but we need it for people who are going to work in Glenwood Springs and be nurses and cops and teachers. We don't need to build affordable housing here for people to drive up valley to Aspen and work and spend their money. So there are huge, interesting issues there, and we had a good crowd, so I was pretty encouraged by it.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Randy, for taking the time.
You're welcome.
That was Randy Essex of the Glenwood Post-Independent. I'm Carolyn Sacharyson, and you're listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. Now we go to the studio to talk about the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority. I've got Roger Merolt, columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snow Mass Sun in the studio, along with Curtis Wackerly. He's the editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Glenn Beaton, who is a columnist for the Aspen Times. Thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Roger and Glenn, you've written some columns. Roger, you wrote the most most recent one in response to Glenn's column about the, it was titled Corruption Resides in Aspen's Taxpayer Subsidized Housing. It was Glenn's, and you wrote The Crime Wave That Makes Aspen Great. So, Glenn, I know you've written, you know, several columns regarding your theory that there is widespread corruption in the housing department here. Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority, why don't you give us your...
Well, I've been writing about this taxpayer-subsidized housing program in Aspen quite a lot over the last several years and the problems with it. In this particular column, I lamented the cheating in the program. In a nutshell, people get housing for dimes on the dollars. The taxpayers pay the difference, and then the people re-rent them for dollars on the dollars. So, you know, for the week of Christmas, you can realize a $15,000 windfall. Some people apparently rent it out for much more than that even. Some people rent it out for the summer, and some people have been caught renting it out for the entire year. This is actually a crime. It's in violation of the housing laws. It's also in violation of the city lodging tax. They don't collect the city lodging tax on this. And you have to assume, I don't have the proof of this, but I think it's safe to assume they're not declaring this illegal income on their state or federal tax returns. So it's tax fraud three ways and in violation of the housing rules. So this most recent column was prompted in particular by a Channel 4 investigative reporter who called me up out of the blue. Never met the guy. Don't know anything about him.
Probably because of your columns, though.
He did say that he had seen my columns, and he wanted to do an investigative report on the matter. So he came up here with his cameraman. He interviewed me, Mike Kozdrowski, with the housing office. And he actually found one of these people who re-rents their houses and got him to go on camera. The person said, hey, lots of people do this. I did it because I needed the money. So this investigative reporter concluded that after looking at the records and talking to a number of people, that the fraud's really rampant. The housing office, Mike Kozdrowski, said, and I quote, it's aggravating and appalling, but there's no penalty. If you get caught doing this 100 times, you'll get told 100 times to stop. So I thought that was all pretty interesting, and his report aired on Channel 4 in Denver. Nothing happened up in Aspen. In fact, none of the local media picked it up. It wasn't in either of the papers, wasn't on any of the radio. Utter, complete, dead
silence. Can I interject here?
Yes, you can, Curtis.
So, I saw Glenn's column. There were a lot of pretty, some big accusations in there. One, that this is rampant and this is going on all over the place. And Glenn also made the allegation that local government's basically complicit in this. So I reached out to the housing authority and I asked them, what is your data and your own internal investigations telling you? How rampant is this? How many cases of this are you aware of? What have you done? What are the punishments you have, in your toolbox to go after this? I'm still working with them on these responses. It's taken a while. We understand.
2 weeks.
We understand they're quite busy. I've heard a lot of anecdotes about this, and I think that's what I think that's what Glenn is basing a lot of this on.
Right.
I'd be very curious to know: do they even have the capability of, say, looking at all the listings on Airbnb or VRBO, and some way checking those out to see who, which of these units are deed restricted? Is that a capability they have? I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's possible. I know the city did something similar to that, trying to ferret out people who weren't paying lodging tax.
Right.
And they have some company that checks this stuff for them. And so.
But even you can't track, like, a friend of a friend wants to come here for Christmas week. And
right.
So my, okay.
I'll, if you're not putting it on the internet,
right.
There's probably no way.
Right. So it's hard to say whether it's widespread.
Well, let's just take the four of us in this room. I mean, we're people who get around town a little bit. We know a lot of people through work, through where we live. How many of us know of any cheating going on in the housing program?
I know zero.
I know zero. I don't know anybody who's doing it.
I know quite a number of instances, in part by my personal experience, but also in part by people who've sent me correspondence saying, I live in such and such unit, all my neighbors do it. Now, that's not the proof that you need in a court of law, but it's
or in a newspaper
evidence
report.
But it's it's evidence to support the discussion.
Sure.
The reaction to my column was kind of interesting. It was generally along two lines. There were people who said the housing system is terrible, and this is just more evidence of why it's terrible. That's one group. Then there was another group that said, no, the housing system isn't terrible. This is a problem in the housing system, and we need to root it out. This is terrible, but the housing system is good. And then there was a third reaction that I heard from Roger's column. As I read Roger's column, he said that not only is the housing system good, but so is the crime. The title of his column was "The Crime Wave That Makes Aspen Great."
Well, let me Let me back you up. You basically said everybody in employee housing is a criminal.
No, I didn't. Point to my column. I did not say that.
You pretty much alleged that.
I did not. That is absolutely false.
You implied that it was widespread, that
Show me the words. Show me the words. My column's right here.
Well, I don't... I mean...
Yeah, well, it says, Aspen residents have the prerogative to get drunk on something for nothing, economic elixirs.
Does that imply that everybody's a criminal?
No, but...
There's a faction in town, and I think it's a very small faction, that looks at employee housing as welfare. And that could not be farther from the truth. The employee housing program is actually a capitalistic idea. I mean, if you look at the roots of it, Aspen had an employee shortage. Businesses couldn't hire people, enough people to run their businesses. So they had some choices. They could either pay their employees enormous amounts of money so they could afford free market housing. They could try to build free market housing themselves for their employees, or they could come up with some group effort that was more efficient. And that's really where the employee housing program came from. It is a capitalistic idea of business owners in this town and residents of this town trying to keep services up, trying to make it feel more like a town so it's more attractive to visitors. This was never designed to be welfare. This was designed as a benefit for everybody who lives here. And I think most people in this town realize it's a benefit for everybody who lives here. So to say, I mean, you've got two issues there you bring out in your column. Number one, you're implying that, you know, somehow if people in employee housing are renting out their places, it's more of a crime than if free market people do. I mean, why would you assume more employee housing people who rent out their units don't declare it on their tax returns than people who own free market homes? And if there's going to be a federal investigation into that, don't you think it would make more sense to go after owners of free market homes? I mean, they can charge 10 times for their homes what employee housing owners can. So if the federal government's looking to collect tax dollars for their effort, it'd be much better to go and investigate free market owners renting their homes and not declaring it on their tax returns. So the crime you're talking about of renting your property is number one, the federal one is off the books as far as I'm concerned. You can investigate anybody anywhere in the country for that. So you're talking about violations of the employee housing rules. Okay, I don't condone that. But, you know, is it worth just throwing away the whole program because a few people take advantage of it, as we just talked about? I don't know anybody who does that.
Well, Roger, you say you don't condone that, but the title of your column is "The Crime Wave That Makes Aspen Great."
Well, it's the crime wave that you implied. That's a play on words.
I think that's a fairly unfortunate play on words to say that crime makes the city great.
There are undertones in Glenn's positions and in his column that he probably doesn't appreciate the housing program itself. And what you're saying is, you know, whether that's a crime that we have to pay for subsidized housing, that's what makes Aspen great.
It's a subsidized housing
program.
Aspen is a better town and a better place to live for everybody because of the subsidized housing program, in my opinion.
If you live in affordable housing, you are not allowed to participate in Airbnb, period.
And it's also tax fraud with respect to the city lodging tax.
Sure.
Absolutely. The city, of course, remember, they made short-term rentals unlimited. If you own your own free market unit, as long as you're paying your taxes on it, you can rent it out as much as you want. And
get a business license.
That, to me, is actually, I think that is what has driven the incredible spike in rents we've seen here over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Because you have all these units that were being rented out
as for employees,
you know, they were free market units, but yeah, there was something that, you know, a middle class type, Aspen worker could possibly afford. But now that the owner has the ability to turn around and rent it out for $400 a night as many times as they want, I know of a handful of units that have been taken out of the long term rental market and are being used exclusively in the short term rental market. That, to me, is a much bigger deal than.
I think that's true too.
That was Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation with Aspen Times columnist Glenn Beaton about Aspen's affordable housing program.
Let me see if I can just put a little bit of a human face on this, whether this is a good system or a bad. I have two brothers and a sister and a mother that live in Colorado. They all live on the Front Range. They bought their housing with their own money. I think it would be great if they lived here. It would certainly be great for them. It would be great for me. But I can't honestly say with a straight face that the presence of my two brothers and my sister and my mother would make Aspen great. I can't say that it would make Aspen great to the point that the city taxpayers ought to pay them a make them a multi-million dollar gift in order to have their presence here. And I certainly can't say that if they did make the multi-million dollar gift and they did obtain their presence here, that the citizens ought to look the other way if my relatives violated the rules. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that some of your relatives are in taxpayer-subsidized housing, Roger, and maybe you have a different take on that. But
yeah,
that's
I
how
do,
I see
I do
it
have
personally.
A completely different take on that. Whether it's me and my family in employee housing or anybody I don't know, it still makes the town better. I mean, there are it provides housing. How many thousands of employees, 3,000 or 4,000 employees live in it, I guess, with family? Those people can afford to live in town. Their employers don't have to pay them exorbitant wages so that they have to go out and find free market housing. And it takes all those people off the highway, which a lot of people consider the traffic problem one of the biggest problems in this town, one of the biggest detractors to its appeal to tourists and residents alike. So if we put those 4,000 people on the road on top of what's already there, I think Aspen's a worse place. If employers have to start paying huge wages and the prices go up so, you know, nobody except the very ultra-wealthy can afford to be in this town, I think Aspen's a worse place. I think even the ultra-wealthy would not like this town as well if it just died at night and nobody was around.
I don't think putting my relatives here in Aspen is worth a multi-million dollar gift from the taxpayer. Now, this point we would have to raise wages.
If you call that a gift, you go back and you're calling it welfare if it's a gift. It's not a gift. It's a trade-off. Everybody benefits. That's my argument. Well, it is not a gift.
Well, I would argue that if you want to find quality journalists or quality teachers or quality nurses, then you have to give them a subsidized housing in
another
some
great
way
point.
Because
it
of the real estate,
better.
Because of the elevated real estate prices.
Here's what I think happens,
Carolyn. I can't attract a good employee if I can't get them a place to live.
I understand.
Imagine what happens is
we pay a subsidy for this taxpayer subsidized housing, and that enables the employers to keep wages low. You know who's the biggest supporter of this? SkiCo. And you know why? Because then they get to pay lifties $11 an hour. And we make up the difference. Or they ask
How much is a ski pass going to cost if they have to pay lifties $50 an hour?
I don't know if it would be $50 an hour, but I will say on behalf of me, I would be willing to pay more for my lift ticket, more for my restaurant, more for whatever. If that caused the employers
wait more time
to pay
in traffic,
a higher
have a worse
living
school system
wage,
a worse hospital.
I don't understand the school system and hospital point. My point is that everybody
would get paid more because
they would have to get paid more, or they wouldn't
be
here.
We have a hard time attracting teachers to this town,
and that's because we don't pay them
because we don't have enough money. Well, how are we going to do that, Glenn? We have a budget. We can't just create money for the schools.
I would be in favor of raising taxes. Let the market handle this by paying people the wage that's necessary to live here. And not this subsidy system where you get it if you win the lottery.
You don't understand school financing in the public school system. It's not that easy just to raise money for the operating budget. You can't just wave a magic wand. It's state mandated. You can raise money for infrastructure for the schools, but getting money in the teachers' pockets is a completely different thing. And about the only way you can do that under the current system is to build employee housing, for the school district to build employee housing and use that as compensation instead of cash.
That touches on another idea that I have. Why not let the employers do this housing themselves?
Well, because they
do. SkiCo does that to some extent.
Yeah, they have 600 units.
Glenn, that is why
they should have more.
Glenn, that is why the employee housing system came into existence, because employees tried to do that and they figured out it was much better just to try to do it together as a community rather than each business to build their own employee housing.
And some have that, you know?
Well, some do. Some if you're big it. Enough, how could my business build employee housing?
Right. Yeah.
For my employees. I mean, couldn't. There's no way.
Maybe you ought to pay them what it takes to live here.
Oh, I should pay my employees $1 million a year? I can't afford to do that either, Glenn.
That's the thing is that the real estate market is so inflated that even if, you know, we pay journalists more here than we would if they were in a metropolitan area.
What we can talk about is this criminal aspect that we all agree is bad and what might be done about it. Because I have a suggestion on that that might surprise you. I have a suggestion where we could allow the rentals to some degree. Here's my idea. And it's half-baked, but let me throw it out there. First, I would say we absolutely draw the line and say if you violate the rules, you're out. You know, it's not this, you get 100 warnings sorts of things. Because everybody knows the rules already. They don't need any more warnings. But you can rent out your unit to some degree. You can rent it out for, pick a number, 5 weeks a year, 10 weeks a year, something that's reasonable. You go past that and, you know, the person's defrauding us from the get-go. But some reasonable amount, because, you know, people do take vacations, and an economist, I think, would tell you that it's a wasting asset if it sits there empty while they're on vacation. But they have to do it through the system. They have to do it through the housing office. And so the city lodging tax gets paid on it. A 1099 gets sent to the renter on it. So we know that federal and state income tax gets paid on it. And the city gets 50%. Because after all, it's a city asset. It's a taxpayer asset. That's my constructive idea. And you can take pot shots at it. But, you know, I think that that could be helpful. That sort of approach. I think the renter ought to get something out of this. After all, he goes to the trouble of it. It's the wear and tear on his furniture. But he ought not get all of it because it's a taxpayer asset. That's my idea.
It's a great idea. Let's do it and stop calling everybody in town a criminal.
I haven't heard of this happening. I'm sure it does. What I have heard of a lot of is people who have neighbors who will turn them into the housing authority for absolutely anything. One of the consequences of the system we've created where everyone has to live by this long list of rules and hours and probably you've created
You tell on your neighbor.
Yeah, there's an incentive there. If you have a beef with your neighbor over something, you have a tool. So anyone can blow the whistle on this here. I'm actually asking these questions. I'm trying to get answers. I'm not just coming out.
Yeah, what the investigative reporter determined in talking with Mike Kostrowski, who's the head of the housing office, is there is no penalty.
I do know that if the housing authority finds you out of compliance with the rules, they can put you into a process, the end result of which could be that you have to sell your unit.
They've evicted
it
people.
It almost never gets to that, and you're correct in that. You know, you go through this process, and a lot of times you wind up getting a slap on the wrist if you agree to come back into compliance. I think there should be a fine. I think there should be something that says if you're caught to have been making a profit renting your unit short term on the tourist market, you should have to, you know, you shouldn't be able to keep those profits.
On that note, I think we will stop here and agree to disagree on some things and agree on some others.
Thank you for the discussion, Carol. Some was destructive, but I thought some was quite productive.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
And always good to be here.
That was Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, as well as Roger Moreau and Glenn Beaton, columnist for the Aspen Times. Thanks to my other guests who we heard from earlier in the show, Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on the show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.